week?
Yeah. Three of my nieces had babies.
Nice. Yeah. Names?
Oh, Gwen. Okay, and some really weird one. Two weird ones.
Moon puppy.
Yeah. Granola.
I can pretend to be awesome.
All right. Let's see. I gotta get my... I don't have that. Right. Well, are we ready?
Fit for me.
Good morning. Does it sound like it's on? Is it on? Okay. I usually hear myself echoing more. Good morning. This is Julie Fedorchak, Chairman of the Public Service Commission. We are on the 12th floor of the State Capitol. It is Wednesday, March 8th at 10 a.m. What?
Ninth.
Oh, it's the 9th? Excuse me. Oh, yes, Wednesday the 9th, sorry. At 10 a.m. for a regularly scheduled Public Service Commission meeting. I want to call that meeting to order. Okay, in terms of opening comments, I just have a couple things I'd like to highlight. First of all, our first state rail inspector, Carl Carson, has officially, we're notified by the FRA yesterday, been certified to as a Federal Rail by the Federal Rail Administration to conduct independent inspection investigations. So he's completed the process, the training process, and now is an official investigator able to go out on his own and do investigations. This is kind of exciting. When we were starting this program, you all asked a lot of questions, the media in the room, about what our time frame was and how long we thought it would take to get this program up and running. And I made my best estimate as to what I thought we could accomplish. And this means he started in September, so he completed that certification in 6 months, which was an optimistic projection, but it's what we had hoped for achieving. So that's really great. He worked very hard. He came with a lot of credentials, and FRA has signed him off, and he's out there now working independently and really adding to the force for inspectors in North Dakota. The FRA has their inspectors that cover North Dakota, Montana, and South Dakota, their track inspectors. Carl will focus only on North Dakota, obviously. And I can tell you, I meet with them on a regular basis, these inspectors, and I just met with them 2 days ago to get an update on what they're finding, what they're seeing, and how they're using their time. And I can tell you that we're finding many ways to improve the safety of the rail system in North Dakota. And I'm not, you know, we're taking a collaborative approach. We want to work with the industry to develop improved safety standards and an overall improved system statewide and work together in partnership, because the industry has the most resources to devote to this. But we are finding a lot of ways to improve on some poor maintenance practices, shortcuts that the industry is taking out there, and really, in some cases, unsafe conditions. So he has been to 75. He was in 75 different communities in 2015, and so far in 2016 has inspected track in 15 different communities. And this includes an entire visual inspection by foot of all the track in Max, Steele, Underwood, and Beulah. And so, again, I think this is a really good use of our resources. This is not general fund dollars. These are taxes that the rail industry was already paying to diesel fuel taxes that they were already paying that have just been redirected to focus in on this particular safety component. So it wasn't even a tax increase. And I think that we're finding some good results as a result of their work in our state. In addition to those communities, he has found 411 defective conditions and 13 violations. So that really shows you that we aren't out there playing gotcha. If we were playing gotcha with the industry, there would be a higher number of violations. We're trying to work with them, finding the defective conditions, helping the industry turn it around, improve those conditions, and make them understand what are the unsafe maintenance practices that they're using and how they can do those better. So I think that that program is off to a good start, and we're excited that Carl is now officially certified and operating on his own. Secondly, I wanted to just mention in the consent portion of the agenda, there's a number of items where we're approving citing fee refunds. And I bring this up because a couple weeks ago, we went in front of the Emergency Commission and asked to have a citing fee increase for Dakota Access Pipeline project to cover some additional funds we needed to pay for third-party construction inspectors. And at that time, House Majority Leader Al Carlson was a little hesitant to provide it and questioned whether or not we ever return money at the end when if ever companies get refunds. And I said, absolutely, they get refunds. We always zero these out. And so I thought it was ironic that at the very next commission meeting, we have a whole list of them. In fact, I added it all together, and today we're returning $75,000 in citing fee to the companies who provided those fees. It's their money. We never thought of it as our money. It's their money. It's used to process their application, and we use what's necessary to do a thorough job and return what's left. And this is an example of how that's done. So with those two things, that concludes my opening comments, and I'd like to kick it over to Randy for his thoughts on the morning.
I'll be pretty brief. You highlighted a very new program with the rail program. I'll just point out a very old program, both for this agency and nationally. On Monday, we just concluded National Weights and Measures Week, something that's been recognized around the country since President John Adams first authorized the first one in 1799 and elicited a great story on it. Last week, we had a press release, but since this is the first time I've had a meeting since that proclamation was issued, I wanted to just point out the great job that our team does of making sure that well over 20,000 commercial weighing and measuring devices around the state provide equitable measurements for people that make commercial transactions and rely on those devices to be accurate.
Thank you, and thanks for bringing that to the attention with the celebration of Weights and Measures Week. Next year we have to come up with something clever to do in conjunction with that. I don't know what it is, but there's got to be something.
We could all three weigh in every year at Weights and Measures
Week. And if it shows it going up, that scale is definitely wrong.
Out. That's where I was going.
That is not in compliance.
Or we could wear our John Adams costumes.
Oh, I'm always looking for an opportunity to wear that costume. Good idea. Oh, all right, Commissioner Kolk.
Always a good, tough act to follow. Commissioner, I was listening to a radio show yesterday. I heard that you were compared to John Adams, so I think there's something that's starting in that. Just a couple thoughts. To Julie's point about the siting fees, I think you're spot on in that, and I even highlight a little more that without those siting fees, the commission would have to add a lot of staff because we use those siting fees to contract attorneys, to contract special experts to help us process the case. And so the goal is that you can staff up via these siting dollars to process the cases. When they're done, you put the money back. You don't grow FTEs. And so as the energy industry ebbs and flows, you can deal with staff based on that. So I think it's a great idea to do that. Before I forget, I have to congratulate South Dakota State University for beating North Dakota State University last night in basketball. So I have to contact Chris Nelson, Gary, and Cindy from the South Dakota Commission. Someone had to talk to Travis Cavula from the Montana Commission, but we know how that finished out at the end of the season for the Bison there. So, and the last thing of substance, this week I'm taking off tomorrow to go with Otter Tail to testify in front of the FERC on Friday morning with more power line issues. I thought 2016 would be the year of the transmission line, and it is not disappointed. We've got many transmission line issues in front of us. We've got a meeting next Wednesday, I think, with MISO, so we continue to be heavily involved with our investor-owned in front of FERC, making sure that North Dakota customers, ratepayers are taken care of. And I believe you're going out there the following week for pipeline stuff.
That's true.
So that's all I have, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thanks, Commissioner Kolk. All right, there are a number of items on the consent agenda. I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, thank you, Alana. Before we continue, thank you, Alana, for filling in today for Daryl, who is in Fargo for an ag rail business council meeting. They're getting together to talk about what they're foreseeing in the months ahead in terms of ag needs for rail, and I felt that it was an important thing for the commission to be at. I would normally try to go myself, but since it was commission meeting day, Daryl is covering that on our behalf. So thank you, Alana, for making that possible. The first item on the agenda in my portfolio, I move the commission adopt the order on recommended findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order into Soro High Plains Pipeline Company, LLC, 12-inch crude oil pipeline, McKenzie County, citing application case number PU-15-720.
Second.
This is a pipeline that was they filed in our office in November. We deemed the application complete in December, and this is a relatively short line. It's approximately 1.4 miles, 12-inch crude oil pipeline and associated facilities in McKenzie County. The project will transport crude oil between the surface site of Targa Resources in McKenzie County and the Tesoro's existing main trunk line.
We have a motion and a second.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lana.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Well, I wasn't done reading it, but I'll keep going.
I'm sorry. Okay. It sounded like an end point to me. I apologize.
I was a page turn. sorry. We'll get used to our style. Yes. So Tesoro concluded there is a need for the project because the project will allow a connection between Targa service site and Tesoro's existing main line. The construction of this project will have a positive effect on the efficient transport of crude oil and would relieve some of the impacts resulting from trucking the crude oil. It also will allow Tesoro to more fully utilize its existing pipeline system, the storage and transportation capabilities of the system, and provide increased flexibility in transporting Bakken crude to the Tesoro Mandan refinery and other customer outlets. This is a the pipeline will have the capacity of 75,000 barrels per day, and the total anticipated cost of the project is $8.9 million. There was 28 different agencies consulted in this pipeline, and those consultations were taken into consideration with this order. The SHPO has concurred with the no historic properties affected, so that's been completed. There are no exclusion areas or avoidance areas present in this project. They will include a supervisory control and data acquisition system that will be installed in this project. It will be monitored 24/7 by a control center in San Antonio, Texas. They have trained emergency personnel ready and available to respond to any spills that may occur, and they will be located in Watford City. They're participating in the One Call excavation system and all landowner easements needed for construction of the pipeline have been obtained. Finally, the company has confirmed that they will design, construct, and operate the project in concurrence with all of the federal U.S. DOT regulations. So that kind of concludes this project and the review of it, and I'm prepared to support this order this morning.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio. Randy.
Okay, I move the commission adopt the order on eligible telecommunications carrier designation in Blue Jay Wireless, LLC, designated eligible carrier, application case number PU-14-720.
Second.
On September 22nd of 2014, Blue Jay Wireless filed an application for designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier for the purpose of receiving federal universal service support for low-income customers. This designation is also known as Lifeline-only ETC. Blue Jay proposes to provide prepaid Lifeline universal services to qualifying low-income consumers as a reseller. On October 8th of 2014, the commission issued a notice of opportunity for hearing. No comments or requests for hearing were received. So on January 7th of 2015, we held an informal hearing to discuss the issues with Blue Jay. And the time, the day and months kind of work out nicely here, but if you're listening closely to the years, you notice that that's over a year ago. I just want to point out that in January of 2015, when we met with them, We requested their USAC audit, which was not returned to us until February 12th of this year. So that is the delay. It's on them. It was not our delay. We have found that both federal law and state law gives this commission the authority to designate a common carrier as an ETC. Blue Jay is a Texas limited liability company and is authorized to do business in the state of North Dakota, as evidenced by corporate papers. Blue Jay is a common carrier and will offer all the services and functionalities detailed in FCC rules. They currently provide prepaid wireless services to customers in 13 states and Puerto Rico, although they do have ETC status in 15 states and Puerto Rico. Their Lifeline plans offer at no charge to the consumer a wireless handset and a nationwide calling area with voicemail, caller ID, call waiting, and three-way calling. They seek only Lifeline support from the low-income mechanism of the Federal Universal Service Fund, and they do not seek support from the high-cost support mechanism. They have indicated an intent to open a storefront in North Dakota within 12 months of being designated by the commission as an ETC. I do have some other comments on Lifeline-only providers in general, but I'll wait to see if there's comments on the specific app here first.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I would maybe just add probably the same thing you're going to go to, that I think it was very important that we waited for that audit to come back, because there is abuse in these kind of programs around the country. So the fact that we waited for that audit to come back, I think, was the right thing. And the FCC also approved their compliance plan, but this is one of those programs that it's out there. But I think where you're going to go is that we've got to keep a close eye on this, because there's abuse in these programs. This program, I think, today is fine, but we just got to keep an eye on all this stuff.
Yeah, I agree with you that these do bear close monitoring. In this case, the problem with their audit or the delay in it, it didn't really have to do with any abuse situations either. It was a situation that was very unique to the state of Hawaii, with a certain language barrier, and it just took some overtime for them to overcome that specific issue. I do want to point out, though, Lifeline-only providers in general, we have this commission, this would be the seventh Lifeline-only provider that would be approved in the state if this motion is approved. Of the six previous ones, one of them was just short of a year and a half ago. The other five were in that 2.5 to 3.5 years ago range. And of the six, only three have done any business in the state. And they seem to kind of start off with a surge, and then a year later, when people need to recertify that they meet the low income requirements and other requirements of Lifeline only, a lot don't recertify. So after that year time frame, by our count, there are less than 1,000 customers for those three companies that are already operating. So it hasn't been an enormous surge of business here, which tells me that we and the companies that we have approved have done a good job of not getting into a situation where there's the kind of fraud and abuse that I think we all read about in some other jurisdictions a couple years ago.
Any further discussion?
Well, I would maybe even think that you really took a good lead on all this. The due diligence we do in every one of these cases, I think some of the dubious operators saw how thorough we were in approving these, that they maybe decided not even to try to apply because they weren't able to go through the scrutiny they needed to go through. So I think we've done a good job to this point of setting the bar pretty high before we approve anything.
I think it's one for this commission and the state of North Dakota to feel good about.
Anything further? Sensing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
All right. Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just curious, Randy, you didn't have any small town trivia for us today. I look forward to that. Do you have any that you'd like to?
I'm saving it for a big one in 2 weeks.
All right. Fair enough. All righty then. Item BK1. I move the commission adopt the order approving settlement in Northern State Power Company's 2013 electric rate increase applications case number PU12813 and the other seven caption cases listed in the announcement.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. This is a, how to explain this, a very thorough, complex, long-standing order to God is here today. So I'll try to hit the highlights, and we'll see where it goes from there. But basically, it is in my motion that the rate case was filed in 2013 dealing with the Northern State Power Company, and basically went through that rate case and settled most of the issues in the rate case. But there were some real big issues that we could not get solved in the rate case. And so when we approved the initial rate case in February of 2014, there were several big items that were kind of left hanging that we wanted to wrap up the rate case as best we could. And we did that. We set some rate stabilization methods in place. We were able to approve some projects. We dismissed some out there. But we wanted to use this opportunity to set a framework. And I'm going to read right out of the order here. Basically, the big things that we hope to cover after the rate case dealing with this, what I call the restack, address the impacts of divergent state energy policies on NSP customers, increase the geographic diversity of NSP's system generation while maintaining system reliability, and also the third thing, provide monetary value to North Dakota customers in the event the company is unable to make good on this agreement. And so if you look at the 10,000-foot level, as we went into this restack, that's the way I always viewed that we were trying to look at it. We wanted to figure out there was projects that came up during the rate case that were built in Minnesota, and I felt, and I'll let my colleagues speak, that they were built just to comply with Minnesota's mandates. And so when we got into the rate case, we didn't really like that idea. And there was projects that were built in North Dakota that we liked, but we wanted to make sure we addressed the need. And we wanted to talk about how we might deal with future energy policies as a integrated company when you deal with multi-state jurisdictions. And so what really happened over the next, couple of years is that, you know, and we the company had to come back with our staff by midsummer and comply with the rate case with what their restack agreement would be and try to answer all these provisions. And in June of this last year, in 2015, the commission granted an extension because basically our advocacy staff and the company said, we need more time to hammer this out. This is such a big deal. And so we granted that. In September of 2015, they filed a negotiated agreement. We'd issued a notice of consolidated hearing. We actually held a hearing in February of 2016, and basically after the hearing, we had some work sessions. There's been other changes made to the settlement agreement, if you will, kind of walking through. But really one of the things that I think the best to do now is just kind of go through it, is that one of the things that the company agreed to was that they would build up to 400 megawatts of natural gas generation in North Dakota. There's been a longstanding discussion between North Dakota and Xcel Energy that they don't build anything in North Dakota. And that's one of the things that we like to see about system diversity, reliability in different parts of their footprint. And they have come online with a couple of wind farms recently, but they haven't made any wholesale investments in North Dakota. And so that was one of the things that, speaking for me, that it was very important that they build something in North Dakota that meets North Dakota needs. We've got Fargo, we've got Grand Forks, we've got Minot, and they need to build something here that's going to meet future needs. And so that was a big point where I don't think we were going to back off from the fact that they needed to build something. Their models show they're going to need some energy at that point in time. That point in time being basically by 2025, that they'll need to have that in place. And of course, you know, if something changes and that needs to slide a little bit, I think we'll certainly look at it. But the models show now that they're going to need that. So this settlement that we're approving today, Xcel basically says they're going to build that, but if they don't, there's going to be huge monetary penalties that go back to the company of Xcel that'll then come back to North Dakota ratepayers as a way of reducing some of the costs. So that, to me, is a big thing in this settlement agreement, that we've got major commitment from the company to build up at least 200 megawatts of natural gas to electricity. So that's big. Another one thing that I think is very big, the cost and volumes of 15 community-based energy development, we call them seabed projects, and two smaller solar PPAs will be excluded from the calculation of NSP's North Dakota Fuel Cost Recovery Rider. So one of the things in the rate case is they had these seabed projects that were directed by Minnesota that they put in the rates for North Dakota customers to pay, and we didn't think that was right. And so as we looked through the restack, basically we said no on this. And in the settlement agreement, they agreed to excluding those from North Dakota rates. And so when you look at what that really means, it's actually a decrease in revenues that will come from North Dakota of $1.6 million in 2016. And for the life of these projects, almost $19 million through 2030. So, you know, it's setting quite a stage that we're saying no, that we're not going to approve these in North Dakota rates. And so they're going to have to go back to Minnesota and other jurisdictions that said they have to do this and figure out how they're going to collect those rates. But quite honestly, that's theirs to worry about. And we'll let Minnesota figure that out. But I think for us, this is not the kind of energy policy that North Dakota wants, that you just basically say you're going to build it no matter what the cost. There's got to be a need. So I think it was a very good setup. And this is part of the settlement that they agreed to. And I think it's very good. There's cost of six key biomass PPAs, Odell and Pleasant Valley wind projects that will be recovered in North Dakota. One thing about this is those resources now are typically the needs of those electricity is being met by combined gas. So this will actually lower the cost in the fuel clause adjustment. It's very hard to figure out exactly what the cost for the average customer decrease is going to be because of this, because it does flow through the fuel clause adjustment. But the best calculations that we could come up with was the change in basically allowing the PPAs for the biomass as well as the two wind farms combined with not allowing the seabed projects is a reduction to North Dakota ratepayers of about $3 million. And so you take that roughly $1 to $1.10 as the decrease in cost for the average customer that they'll see by us not allowing this to go forward. And so there's also some things that we talked about that as far as how we figure the coincidental peak, whether it's 12 CP or 1 CP, that was one of the big things that came out in the last rate case. This settles in that we're going to basically that for the most part there's a rebuttable presumption that we'll go with the 12 CP, which that was a big topic in the rate case. Also what it does is this also extends the rate freeze through 2017. I think that was also a big win for North Dakota customers. And so in the previous rate case, the company had a rate increase of 4.9% for 2013, 14, 15, and a rate freeze through 16. This negotiated agreement today extends that rate through 2017. So I suspect that in 2018 they might be in for a rate case. But the point is we were able to, you know, keep those rates stable for one more year. So I think I've kind of walked through this pretty quickly, but the long and short of it is that we had the rate case. We were able to work through a lot of the issues, but there were some big ticket items that were sticking out. And now with this restack agreement, as well as it lays out through this settlement, I think we've solved all those. It sets a framework of what where North Dakota sits on what type of energy Xcel is going to build that we will approve. It resolves all the issues. And I think that, you know, the Clean Power Plan was just stayed. And so companies now, I think, have to step back a little bit and say, okay, what are we going to do? We'll see where the court lays itself out. But if we stick with good rate-making principles, I think we're going to be fine. And that's what I think this case today really does, is it says North Dakota is going to stick by the rate-making principles. If you need it and it's low cost, we'll approve it. If you don't need it and it's not low cost, we're not going to approve it. So I'm sure if you talk to my colleagues in Minnesota, they're going to have to struggle with what to do with the reduction in revenue that's not going to come from North Dakota. But that's a policy choice from Minnesota. If they're going to direct these kind of policies, then they're going to figure out how they're going to pay for them. So that's the side, I think, that Minnesota will have to struggle with. But for North Dakota, we're going to get some electric reliability generation in eastern North Dakota, at least 200 megawatts. We're able to get the rate freeze one more year. We're also basically, I think, setting a good stage for where we sit with the energy policy. So I think, Madam Chair, I'm kind of walking in circles now, but I think that hits the highlights of this case.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I would just kind of reiterate or maybe phrase differently and shorter. No, you needed to explain it, and I appreciate all the details and the explanation. But to some extent, I blame NSP for some of the things that they get into, and to some extent I have some sympathies for them being a multi-state company that works under different regulatory regimes, and they're getting pulled different directions by regulators, and so they do operate in kind of a tough minefield, and there's regulators in some of the states that are determined to impose arbitrary costs on these multi-state utility companies. And I think this order, if we pass it, is going to show that this commission is just as determined to make sure that North Dakota customers don't have to pay those arbitrary costs.
Well, for my part, I agree. Excel's in kind of a tough position. They have a lot of masters to please, and they come from different states and different policy groups. There's pro-coal, there's pro-nuclear, there's pro-renewables, and those are all just, you know, very deeply embedded within the territory that they serve. For the part of this order today and this settlement agreement, I really do think it attempts to provide some clarity to the arena in which North Dakota customers of XL are finding themselves. So we got rid of 17 of those expensive community-based energy projects with significant savings for North Dakota customers. We accelerated their commitment to build in North Dakota a natural gas facility in the valley, and that has important ramifications for reliability in that area. And so that's a real improvement, and that accelerates from 2036 to 2025. 2036 was the original agreement from 2014 settlement. And then it extends this rate moratorium for a whole other year, so XL customers will not have a general rate increase. We know that there's a lot happening with XL system and MDU and Otter Tail. There's just a whole lot of changes occurring, refreshing the system, rebuilding, replacing, and then the whole issue of renewables and environmental mandates that are forthcoming. So it's going to remain a dynamic time, but I do think that this settlement agreement is a step in the right direction and provides some clarity in this dynamic time for ratepayers. And I think we'll continue to hold strong for those kind of principles moving forward, despite all of the forces that are encouraging utilities to do things differently.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Lana. Item BK2. I move the commission find the formal complaint filed by the North Dakota Public Service Commission advocacy staff on March 1st, 2016, states a prima facie case and serve the complaint on the respondent in Public Service Commission Phoenix Construction Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU15-166.
Second.
Thank you. This motion and the next motion are basically the advocacy staff feels there's enough in these cases to request prima facie. So we basically say, yes, we agree. We're not making any determinations on it, but basically this sets the stage for the potentially hearings coming down the road. So I'll go through facts of what the advocacy staff has determined from their viewpoint. Phoenix Corporation is a registered North Dakota sole proprietorship with offices located right here in Bismarck. The complaint was filed by the City of Bismarck, which, of course, is a incorporated municipality in North Dakota. A variety of North Dakota one-call laws come into place. The facts that the advocacy staff has determined at this point, on April of 2015, the commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from the Director of Utility Operations for the City of Bismarck. The complaint alleges violations by Phoenix, a North Dakota company, that they failed to provide an excavation notice to the North Dakota One Call Center at least 48 hours before its excavation. So we've seen these kind of complaints before, and we have, a process that continues to evolve and continue to get better. In April of 2015, the staff issued a letter informing Phoenix of Bismarck's complaint filing, a request for a response. We still have not received a response from Phoenix. And one of the things why this last meeting and this meeting, basically you're seeing more of these come forward, is the commission met with our advocacy staff and said, listen, there's a lot of these cases that are out there. I know you're trying to work through with these companies, but if you think that there's enough for a prima facie, move it forward. If you don't think there's not, close it. So that's why we're seeing these come forward. As alleged by the Bismarck complaint, on or about November or December of 2014, Phoenix began an excavation defined North Dakota law while performing an excavation for a building addition at 133 South Bell Street in Bismarck. As a result of the excavation, damage was caused by a backhoe to a Bismarck 36-inch storm sewer line. Phoenix made no attempt to notify Bismarck or any other operator to the damage of this, and instead they basically backfilled the hole and didn't tell anyone. Just to highlight, I talked about in November or December is when Phoenix was doing the digging. It wasn't until April that the City of Bismarck notified or would notice what happened. So basically, they're doing the excavation, according to what staff has found, during the pre-winter time, November-December time frame. They hit this storm sewer line. They covered it up, and it wasn't until the thaw and water starts flowing through that the city of Bismarck figures this out. So then as soon as they noticed it, they, of course, filed the complaint. There are probably other complaints that will be filed. I shouldn't say that that way. There may be other things that the city of Bismarck does with this company. That's for other jurisdictions to figure out. But the cost to the city of Bismarck facilities is estimated to be over $84,000. So that's a question for the city, what they want to do. But for us, the facts of this case, the advocacy staff has presented, are certainly enough to rate a prima facie case. And the two things that staff always recommends to us are basically, you know, what they think the remedy should be. In this case, this is the first time I've seen this up to this point. They're recommending staff a violation of $1,000 for violation of North Dakota Century Call, basically failing to use one call. But staff is recommending a $10,000 fine for violation of North Dakota Century Code 492306, which says failure to notify operator of damage to their facilities. So this is the first time that I can recall this. And so it's a significant recommended violation from the staff for the second portion of this, not notifying the company. So I look forward to the hearing on this, if needed.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
Thank you, Lana. Item BK3. I move the commission find the formal complaint filed by the North Dakota Public Service Commission advocacy staff on March 2, 2016 states a prima facie case and serve the complaint on the respondent in Public Service Commission Greenway Earthworks LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU15-217.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. Greenway Earthworks LLC is a limited liability company with its main offices in Kildare, North Dakota. Hess Corporation, of course, we're all aware of Hess, a major company in North Dakota. Hess filed a complaint against Greenway that they failed to utilize the North Dakota One Call system. Our staff informed Greenway of this complaint. Greenway basically said they were working on someone else's One Call ticket, which staff says, of course, that's not the way it works. Staff has gone through this and has determined that Greenway did not call in their own One Call ticket, and staff is recommending that at least $500, and of course we can apply up to $25,000. So staff is saying $500 fine. In this case, no one was hurt, nothing was damaged. But, you know, Hess, just like we saw in Enbridge here a couple weeks ago, there certainly this shows they're keeping an eye on their facilities. People are out there digging around that shouldn't be. They're calling our staff to determine, and once again, we'll look forward to potentially the hearing on this.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I would just say, even though this puts it on the pathway to a hearing, they could still accept a consent agreement and
Absolutely.
Sign that and settle this thing without a hearing. And I remain hopeful that that's the path that they'll take.
Yes, ma'am.
Anything further? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion's approved.
Thank you, Lana. Item BK4. I move the commission adopt the order approving settlement in Montana Dakota Utility Company, a division of MDU Resources Group, Inc., Generation Resource Cost Recovery, Tariff and Rates, Case Number PU15-704.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. In October of last year, MDU filed an application to implement a change in rates under its Generation Resource Recovery Rate Rider. And the change as proposed is to basically true up the Heskett 3 revenues required, as well as the addition of the reciprocating internal combustion engines, or the RICE engines, that are co-located with the Lewis and Clark Generation Station. Let's see here. On November 18th, we issued a notice of opportunity for hearing. In January of this year, the commission advocacy staff filed a settlement agreement. On February of this year, they filed a revised settlement agreement. So what we have today is whether we accept or reject the settlement agreement. And what I would like to say is I think the settlement agreement makes good sense, but I want to walk through some of the specifics just to refresh folks' memory. The Heskett Station is an 88-megawatt simple cycle combustion gas turbine that the commission has granted ADP on it. We know that the MDU needed it. And when it was time for that to figure out how to pay for it, the company recommended a rider for this generation, and I thought that was a good idea given the fact that it was at the time they filed it, they didn't need any revenues because they were over-earning. It was set into place that at some point in time we'd implement that rider to be used to recover for them to recover the monies needed. But one thing about riders is that I'm a fan. I shouldn't say a fan. I respect the fact that we need transmission riders and we need the renewable riders because of the fluctuation and changes. But the generation rider, even when this was filed, I didn't want this to become a long-term thing. It was just a short-term best way to solve a problem. But I don't think we should have generation riders. For generation resources, they should be put into base rates as soon as they can for these types of facilities. So when we put the rider in place for the Heskett station, the implication was that this would be in place till the next rate case. So when the company quite honestly filed to add the reciprocating units, which were 18.6 megawatts of natural gas-fired electricity, I didn't like that idea. And so I think what we've done here is I like the idea of letting them put it in the resource generation rider short term. We also have commitment from the company that by September of this year, they will file a rate case. And so what we've done is by approving this rider today, it trues up the Heskett cost. It integrates the reciprocal units into there for now. It also, the company says, yes, we will come in front of for a rate case in September so we can go through all the costs of all the company resources and we can true up these. So that'll be the end of the generation rider. One thing today, it also caps sets the ROE at 10.5 vice 10.75, which MDU is operating right now. So able to reduce that amount a little bit. And the revenue they need is about $9.6 million. So there is an increase here of $1.94 for the average MDU customer per month. So that will become effective the next billing cycle. And we'll see how it all lays out when we get into the next rate case. But I think this is a good method of truing up these resource costs. And then it does make sure that the consumers will be receive a full review of what MDU's costs are starting September of this year.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Thanks, Commissioner Kalk, for explaining all that and going through the details. One thing I would just add is that if the company over-collects between now and when the rate case is settled, there is a mechanism in the settlement to return anything higher than its 10.5% ROE to the ratepayers. And so I think that's another important component of this settlement agreement.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion's approved.
Thank you, Lana. For item BK5, I would ask my colleagues that I would like to move this to admin and then have the three of us discuss it a little bit before I make this motion. And I'll just give you the quick Reader's Digest version that this motion, initially we approved something suspending the rates for this, the Otter Tail, at about a 1% increase for about $1 per customer. And since they've updated this with almost a $3 increase for customers based on some facts that they believe are relevant, and we'll see. But I may want a hearing on this, but I want to talk to the two of you. So I just request that we move this to admin, talk through it, and then we'll go from there. That's all right.
And is this the one that staff has scheduled an informal on as well?
I believe there is an informal. This motion would say anybody wanting a formal hearing must do so by April 15th. But I'd like to talk to the two of you, and basically I'm leaning towards a formal hearing right now, but if I do want to talk to
you. And then scratch the informal.
And then scratch the informal, just go right to a hearing because it's a significant change.
Mm-hmm.
So I just ask to hold that for the discussion.
But sure.
All righty, and then item BK6. Finally, I move the commission adopt the order in Northern State Power Company's customer credit DOE settlement 2014 through 2016, case number PU16-19.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. In January of this year, NSP filed an application to refund approximately $700,000 received by NSP pursuant to a settlement with the United States Department of Energy for a partial breach of contract to take spent nuclear fuel during 2014. Under the Nuclear Waste Policy Act, utilities are required to enter into contracts with DOE for the disposal of spent nuclear fuels. Utilities contributed 1.1 mil for every kilowatt hour generated by their nuclear plants. In exchange, DOE committed to transport and dispose of the spent nuclear fuel beginning no later than January of 1998. NSP has filed the first of two lawsuits against DOE. These lawsuits have been basically settled where DOE is going to refund the money back to the companies, the customers that paid it in. And this is the first year. It goes through 2014, 15, and 16. And so it's basically they've breached a contract. They've not figured out the disposal issues. So the companies, our ratepayers, have paid in. North Dakota's share of that for this year is $700,000. And so what this motion does today is it NSP will return that with no later than 90 days from this order to the customers, but via a one-time bill credit. Approximately $3 for the average customer is what they'll see as a one-time bill credit for the North Dakota system.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I just wanted to make a couple points on this one. First of all, NSP, North Dakota customers get about 30% of their electricity from nuclear. And so there's been a lot of discussion about nuclear waste in North Dakota with the ERC study and that. And in that discussion, I've heard different folks say that, well, you know, why should North Dakota do this when we don't have any nuclear? And it's true, we have no nuclear plants in North Dakota, but our customer, we do have customers of our largest utility who get 30% of their electricity from nuclear. So we are contributing to the generation of this waste. And so it isn't accurate to say that we have nothing at stake. We do. I was at one of the nuclear facilities outside of Minnesota in December and saw where they're storing this waste now. And it's in about 15-foot canisters that are lined up inside a bunker just outside of the facility. They're, you know, not, they're safe and they're tested and, you know, all of this. But it clearly isn't a long-term solution for disposing of this this waste that's generated through the electricity development. So I think we have to get more serious in this country about deciding whether we're going to have nuclear or not. And if we are, we have to find a way to dispose of it safely long-term, not just leave it in canisters sitting out in the middle of a field. I also, on that tour, was given this little pellet, this little demo thing, card. This little pellet, this little black pellet, is an example of a uranium fuel pellet. It's just a plastic bead, but but it's what they look like. And this little plastic bead or uranium fuel pellet provides enough, the equivalent of 149 gallons of oil, 1 ton of coal, or 17,000 cubic feet of natural gas. So that's just, I think, a pretty powerful illustration of how valuable that nuclear power is, how efficient. And it's carbon-free. And so, again, each fuel source has pros and cons. We know the cons of nuclear. We know the pros. It's carbon-free. So it's one of the only viable long-term baseload options that exist if we're going to have carbon-free electricity generation in our world long-term. So I think that, well, this is great for our ratepayers. I continue to believe that North Dakota does have a role in trying to figure out a way for the long-term storage of this, and I wish that the federal government would make good on its original intentions and promise of providing that solution.
Any further discussion?
Well, I had intended to make the same point that I think it's just good for the people of North Dakota to understand that large parts of our population are served by nuclear power, even though we don't have a nuclear power plant geographically located within the state. But you did a fine job of making that point. So I'll just inquire. That probably explains that when I came in real early this morning, it was a little dark, that glow that was coming from your office.
This is my deterrent device in my office.
Any further discussion?
Well, I might just add it. We know it's XL customers get some of the nuclear power, but the way the RTOs, the regional transmission organizations, are set up, that CapEx line that the commission approved that goes into Fargo, it would bring in nuclear power and coal power and gas power into North Dakota. So the Cass County Electric and NODAC and any of the other co-ops that might be served in that area. So it's not just XL customers. It'd be potentially anybody in North Dakota that buys power from MISO, because those nuke plants are pretty much a must run, so they're running all the time. So as the power gets dispatched, probably everybody at some point in time in eastern North Dakota gets some of those nuclear atoms, whatever you call them, isotopes.
Anything further? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio, Madam Chair.
Excellent. All right. Well, I don't have my schedule, so I will skip the announcements and go straight into any questions from the members of the audience.
One clarification about the Excel or NSP settlement.
Yes, sir.
That, are they still talking about the, would it be one or two natural gas turbines at Hankinson?
Though that has been basically, they are no longer talking about that. That was one of the things that they requested an ADP, and we dismissed that. They requested it to be withdrawn, so they are not talking about the Hankinson plants they initially filed. Now, quite frankly, the commitment to build the up at least 200 megawatts, I suppose there's a scenario it could end up back in Hankinson. We don't know where that spot will be, but the request they filed for Hankinson is no longer on the table.
But the point is they have agreed to do 200 megawatts by 2025.
Yes, at least.
Minnesota basically forced them to abandon that Hankinson project in exchange for something else in Minnesota, the solar and some gas in Minnesota.
The $11 million that settlement came in to date for damages, how does that translate to the ratepayer? Any idea?
Sure. When we go through, like, for example, the rate case that we went through in 2013.
Money dollar-wise.
Well, I'd have to do some calculation on that. If you figure now, they basically had $700,000 that was a one-time credit of $3. Jerry, can you do some ciphering for me on that and get that to James?
I'll look it up.
Yeah.
Have those payments been named every year since the legal settlement in 2011 deal?
They've been included some way in North Dakota customers' rates. For example, during the rate case, that was considered an offset. So every year North Dakota has gotten the credit. It may not have gone back as a bill credit because during the rate case, that'd be considered a decrease in what the revenue they may need.
Either for rate cases or refunds.
Yes.
And it was $11 million just for North Dakota customers.
Right.
Yeah.
Understood.
Okay.
And that's through 2016 or until 2016?
It's through 2016. Today's is for 2014 return, and so we would assume that there's a true-up factor here. So we'll have two more years of this at least that will come back to North Dakota customers.
So a similar amount of money?
I would think so. We haven't seen the exact numbers, but I would think it'd be very consistent. It has been to this point.
Anything else?
Can you spell Carl's name?
K-A-R-L. Carson with a C, C-A-R-S-O-N.
What's his official title again?
Track inspector.
And I came in a little late. So as of today, he's done with all the things?
Yep, he's been officially certified by the Federal Rail Administration, and that allows him to conduct inspections on his own and have all the same authority as the Federal Rail inspectors.
As of today?
Yep, we got this letter yesterday, so it was actually as of yesterday. Effective, 2 days ago. I'm still on the 8th. Effective on the 7th.
And the numbers you were giving as far as on age effective conditions, is that inspection with FRA? Or?
Since he started, yep, side by side. He started, I believe, September, like the first part of September, but I can get you the exact date.
Julie, can you go over those inspections again?
Like the numbers?
Yes.
411 defective conditions, 13 violations.
When you say defective conditions and violations, I guess, can you kind of...
Well, so defective conditions, and I have pictures here if you guys want to look at some of them afterwards, can be anything from, you know, they have some examples of putting in some... joints on a rail that don't fit appropriately, they're not sized for that type of rail, and so that's a defective condition. It's not a violation. They need to fix it. If they don't fix it, then it would be in a violation. But there's the type of conditions that contribute to wear and tear on the track that leads to, you know, more serious conditions and safety hazards down the road. And it's a whole. The things that he's finding just basically, they, you know, taking shortcuts and finding some just not good standard operating procedures and maintenance practices, and you know, just taking shortcuts. So some of them could be violations, or some of them could be just a defective condition, and some of those could result in violations. It just depends on the severity. Yep. Depends on the severity. Now, the violations, they can have a penalty. The defective conditions don't. But defective conditions also can result in shutting down a track if it's serious enough. So there's different solutions for each of them as well.
So the penalties would be federally imposed? Imposed by?
Depends. You know, the penalties, if they're monetary penalties, yes, those are handled by the FRA. Something hot off the presses?
That's the breakdown. Thank you.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, exactly, huh?
I guess a quick refresher about how many inspectors are there again?
Ours, we have two. We have two.
No, I meant FRA.
FRA, I believe they have three. You might want to check with them for sure, but I believe they have three that are based in North Dakota, serving North Dakota, South Dakota, and Montana.
When do you expect our second?
He's working through the process as well, but, you know, he just started in December. So I guess it's a little too soon for me to predict when he'll be certified. He didn't spend as much time on mechanical systems with the rail as Carl spent on track. So Carl came to us with a lot of experience on his own.
I'm assuming then these 13 violations in total were in concert with the FRA.
Correct. Correct. Okay. Yep.
Did you come up with about $47 per average customer? It doesn't give you the number you're looking for, though, James. That gave the breakdown by year.
It's like a Trains End.
The number you've got there shows the breakout by year of the lump sum. But it looks like
the total, what are we talking? 47 total?
That's what I look.
The
average customer has received about $47 back as a breakout of that $11 million for North Dakota.
Okay. Beautiful. Thank you.
That would include that.
Okay.
Because I use the total dollar amounts.
We'll bring to 47 then the...
Right.
Okay.
Just real quick, what's the timeline for that Tesoro line?
You know what? We have company reps, rather than digging through, can you guys tell me, are they going to break ground on that fairly soon, on the Tesoro pipeline?
As soon as everything...
is improved. And all the, yeah, this spring. I'd have to pull out my whole application, which I don't have with me.
We'll be starting at 11:20 today.
Yeah.
We had a wind farm like that one time, seriously.
So would you call this settlement with Northern States Power Company excellent?
I would, Dave. But you know, David,
waiting for years to do that.
You keep forgetting, I bet. You leave and you're like...
Dave, it's a great setup because we have the MARC conference coming this summer, and one of the panels we've got set up is Xcel Energy CEO, Otter Tail, and MDU talking about this, just what Randy and Julie said about how companies deal with this. And, you know, the Minnesota legislator and the governor over there, they're not backing off at all. The governor, Dayton, just said he's going to push to increase the renewable standard. And so, you know, what's interesting is that Xcel Energy does get treated differently than the other investor owns in the state, and the co-ops get exempted from some of it. So that's where, like Randy and Julie were saying, is they do tend to get treated over there. But at the end of the day, we try to figure out the best way to educate those policy people about the impacts, but it's their own state. So, but this is a hot topic every time I get together with my colleagues in Minnesota.
Anything else? All right. Well, that concludes the regular portion of the meeting. We'll get back together in 10 after for the admin portion, and I'm really eager to try to finish by 11:30 if at all possible.